Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach out of Los Angeles. You might remember that she guest hosted the podcast this past January and came on live with me in August of 2021 and actually was in person with me again in August with our episode 238 called Stress Talk. Jeannie spent 16 plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. In her program, clients learn how to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and finally heal their chronic pain. As we start this new year, it may be an important opportunity to reflect on your own TMS journey. Are you happy with your progress so far? Has the quality of your life deteriorated since last year? What will happen in 3 or 6 or even 12 months if nothing changes? Jeannie's one-on-one program will give you the support, consistency, and accountability to finally achieve your desired results. It may be time to admit that doing it alone just isn't working anymore. How would it feel to work with someone who will take a stand for your dreams? Jeannie offers free 45-minute consults where you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com, that's JeannieColwin.com, and book your free call to see if it's a good fit. Welcome back to the pod. It is January the 25th, 2023. Hard to believe. Nevertheless, wanted to make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. If you go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast, that would be the place to continue supporting the show. I have great appreciation for all of you that have come back week after week, month after month, to continue supporting the show. And as I talked about on last week's episode, it is looking like Wednesday, February the 22nd at 12 p.m. Pacific is going to be the patrons-only available live Q&A. I just have to figure out the technical components of that to do live video like that with a chat window. So I'll get it figured out. I'm confident I'll get it figured out. But the patrons that are going to be able to join, so you have to come on and be a patron before February 1st to be able to join in on this. So it's going to be pretty awesome. I would tell you that you should come. I think it's going to be a great time. So let me give a shout out to Albert and Jeff, Julie, Albert, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Paul, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast, as I said, every single week and every single month. I've got an interview in store for you. I came across the Compassionate Psychologist on Instagram, and I gave her a shout, and I said, hey, I want to chat, and I don't want to give away too much, so you'll just have to listen to the interview. But this was a really nice conversation about an element of the podcast that I feel like has sort of been talked about like on the peripheral, but not really gone in deep on compassion, what's required of it, how it can help in this process, where it can lend its great assistance, things like that. So without further ado, here is the Compassionate Psychologist, Linda, and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I'm here with Linda Stone, who is calling out of Connecticut. Linda, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, thank you for being here, first of all. I'll tell a very short story, but what had caught my eye, you and I have been connected on social media for a bit. Your handle is The Compassionate Psychologist, and the reason I had reached out to you is that my wife, when she's getting the kids ready in the morning for school, she always has this phrase that she says to them. She says, be kind to others and be kind to yourself. And I told her a couple months ago, I was like, you know, the kind to yourself thing is really something. And that's what I think about in terms of compassion, but this is an open forum. And so maybe that's not what you mean when you think about compassion, but I'm excited nevertheless to delve into it and learn a little bit more about that topic.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah, I mean, when I think of compassion, it definitely involves kindness, compassion to yourself and compassion to others and kindness to others. But it's a lot more involved than that. So I was, when I was a teenager, I had no self-esteem. I had no sense of self. I had no confidence in myself. I always compared myself to other people and thought they were better than me and that they were like the most confident people in the world, which is, I'm sure, wasn't true.
Yeah.
So I went into the education field to start with, and I taught psychology and sociology at a high school. And then that was in Massachusetts. And when I moved to Connecticut, I taught special ed for a while and then became a school psychologist. And I was in Arizona getting a reading, I guess, about 10 years ago. And the person that was reading, giving me a psychic reading, was an ex-nurse. He was an older man. He was 75. And he said, "You're one of us. You're a helper. You're a healer."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah." And that's how I look at myself, as a healer. So now that I'm retired from working in a school, I have private practice part-time where I do counseling, group counseling, and individual counseling. But my goal has always been over the years to help people, to young people, to feel better about themselves and have a sense of self. So from the time I was teaching seniors in high school when I was like 21 or 22 till now, my goal is to work with that. But the self-compassion piece came to me later, the actual study of self-compassion. When I retired about 5 years ago, that was 5 years ago. I think 4 years ago, my niece said to me, "Did you ever hear of the self-compassion workbook?" And Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer are the authors of that. And she said, "You know, you might like that." And so I got the workbook. I started using some of the work with my clients, and then COVID came and basically shut down seeing people in person. And meanwhile, I found mindful self, their mindful self-compassion. So I found meditations offered by the Mindful Self-Compassion Center. They were offered during COVID to help people to connect so that they weren't alone. They didn't have the alone feeling. And I've been doing those since. They're still offering them 3 years later, and I try to participate 3 or 4 times a week. Usually, sometimes there's 100 people on a call from all over the world.
Oh, wow.
So you really feel a sense of connection.
And so I'm curious, like you said that you taught this, that you taught psychology and sociology in high school. Mm-hmm. When, like, I guess as far back as you can, or when you went to school in the first place, like as a student, when did psychology, like, you know, when did it become of such interest that it said, "Oh, I think I could do this for a living"?
Oh, I think I majored in psychology.
Okay.
But I also majored in education, because secondary education, because I knew that when I got out of school, I would want to work. And I always wanted to be a clinical psychologist and go back to grad school and get a PhD. But, you know, with moving, getting married, having kids, it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I became a school psychologist eventually and got a degree in special ed, did that for about 10 years, and then became a school psychologist. I was actually a counselor at a boys' school in between, guidance counselor. And school psychology was good. I was able to help people. The school systems have gotten really difficult to work in. So the last probably 5 or 6 years that I was doing that, I had very little opportunity for counseling. And I had kids that would come see me all the time, like groups of kids, individual kids. I worked with an at-risk team, always trying to work on skills that would help them to cope in life.
Yeah.
And but the last few years, I wasn't given the opportunity to see a lot of kids. I had to really fit them in. And I was one of the only psychologists in the history of being a school psychologist that did a lot of counseling in groups. Most of them just did the testing and the paperwork and the meetings. So they weren't as interested. I think in retrospect, I probably would have been a social worker if I redid things, because everyone said to me, "You're more of a social worker than a psychologist, school psychologist anyway."
It's funny. You talk about, it's actually really ironic. A couple days ago, I can't remember if it was Monday or if it was Tuesday, but I think it was Tuesday. I was just kind of, I was in like a, just a little bit of a funk about my job. And I've been in tech sales for a long time. I mean, I've been in sales since 08, but tech sales since 2011. And I started thinking like, my parents were both teachers. My mom taught high school biology and chemistry. My dad taught elementary education. And then did some subbing in the high school systems and such. But his passion was really like eighth grade and below. And he's semi-retired, still does some substitute. My mom teaching biology to teenagers on Zoom, I think broke her and she retired 3 years early. teaching has always kind of had this allure to me, but then me always thinking about, gosh, like going back to school, doing whatever, like I have a bachelor's degree, but, I'm not sure what even goes into teaching certification, but I had this like epiphany on Tuesday. I was like, you know, what'd be awesome is like, if there was a way to like intersect psychology and education, boom, hey, there's school psychologists. And I started thinking about like some of the people I really, really like, the staff members that I really loved going to actually talk to and interact with that were adults in high school were the school psychologists and the school counselors. So it's just really ironic that that's your background. Because I didn't know that prior to you saying it 2 minutes ago.
Right. I really didn't tell you my past background. Yeah. And I mean, I'm still searching for my purpose, I think. My purpose has always been to work with people and to help them. And it's like I want to help more than I am. So I'm trying to, I may do something with like larger groups online that work with self-compassion and mindfulness or in anxiety and social connection, because connection has been a really big thing since COVID. And I do have a group where we work on, it's young women with, we work on connection, social skills, social anxiety, self-compassion, mindfulness, variety. We use art, we do artwork, we do writing, meditations, self-compassion exercises, intention. I mean, we do a little bit of everything and they're great, but I'd like to somehow, I think I want to expand that into something bigger.
When you were going to school, like when you were like in college, because you can take different types of psychology classes and that was your area of study, was there any particular, like I took social psych, I took general psych, I took human sexuality, I took child psychology, like I took a lot of different ones, and social psychology is really, those courses were the ones that really spoke to me more than any others. Was there any other, like any particular direction of study spoke to you?
Actually, my minor was sociology, so I like the social psychology. I like sociology also, but I like the abnormal psych. I always liked abnormal psychology classes. Child psych, I liked adolescent psych, but the abnormal was interesting because then you're getting into all the types of things that people have. I'm not going to say it's wrong with people, but they have, you know, they're dealing with mental health issues.
Yeah.
The whole gamut. From minor to more severe.
Yeah.
I like interested in case studies and, you know, reading autobiographies and things like that. And I still am.
So one thing I'm fascinated about is, and we talked about this on the phone a little bit yesterday, is that there is, and if this doesn't make sense, please tell me. But one thing that I've always wondered, especially when I first had read Dr. Sarno's work, was around these personality types and who are susceptible to having chronic pain issues and some sort of disease issues and just, you know, long lasting chronic issues of some kind. And the two most prominent that he talks about the most is the perfectionist and the people pleaser. And to me, like, perfectionist is sort of the antithesis of self-compassion. And so talk a little bit about how does compassion, self-compassion, let's start there. How does self-compassion play into people that are perfectionists? Because one thing that I just have a tough time balancing when I'm thinking about it is how can one have, for instance, like goals or want to be successful or push themselves to, you know, achieve things, but also have self-compassion? Because all too often, and I'm guilty of this too, you have a goal, you don't achieve that goal, you feel like you're the worst, and that's sort of the end of it. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's really common. And that's why I think picking up this extra piece of learning about teaching self-compassion skills was really important, because now I'm seeing it in every way. And with the TMS and Dr. Sarno and Nicole's work, Nicole Sachs, it's a component of their program to help yourself to get over, or to work with feeling like you're struggling and you're a perfectionist and you're talking to yourself really negatively and you're like, oh, I hate myself. I mean, things like that. We all have language that we use.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have it too, but you can also, then you can go and you can do some of the steps of self-compassion and say, okay, there's the step first. And there's a lot of things you can do, but this mindfulness, and then, which is being aware of what's going on. And the theory is that all people suffer. So it's not going to take away the suffering necessarily, but it will make you, mindfulness is being aware of how you feel in the moment or where you're at in the moment. And then you don't have to have a quick fix for that. And then there's the common humanity piece, which is the connection piece. And you look and you say, you know, other people are suffering too. Other people have some of the same issues. And maybe I'll ask you for a specific example in a few minutes from you.
Yeah.
And then, so that kind of helps. And then, so what am I going to do for myself to make myself feel better? Okay. And then this phrase is, I mean, there's so many things you can use, but there's phrases you can use, like, you know, that you could, loving kindness towards myself. I am enough. I am, I like myself just the way I am. It's okay to make a mistake once in a while. Nobody's perfect. Everybody is perfectly imperfect.
One thing that's connecting for me, because I'm looking at I've been taking notes as you've been talking, and one of the first things you had talked about was like kind of as a teenager having this no sense of self, and now you're talking about the things that you're studying and have interest in now. Seems like those two things have to be related, right?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, I mean, I had also gone for therapy a lot of my life, which helped also. But I think trying to uncover like chronic pain issues and eating issues and things that you don't feel, just not feeling good about yourself for whatever reason. I mean, with chronic pain, you know, TMS, you know that you're not going to feel good about yourself when you're in a chronic pain cycle. But this gives you more tools to use than just therapy.
Yep.
And then you also get to the root of your emotions. You could go, you know, if you take a self-compassion break, which they recommend a couple of times a day, some people set a timer, but you could just say, okay, I'm feeling distressed right now. I'm feeling uncomfortable. Why is that? And just be mindful of what's going on. And then, other people feel this way for some of the same reasons. I'm not alone. And then what can I do to make myself feel better? And you might, like I said, it might not be a quick fix, but even like a cup of tea or a coffee, cappuccino, a walk, and for you maybe working out, anything, even something short that you can do, like, what do I need? And for me, what do I need a lot of times is I want to be calm. I want to do something that makes me feel calmer. It could be breathing. It could be a short meditation. It could be a walk. And I don't always do the things that I should do. It could be reading a book for a while, just sitting and reading. So what do you have a situation that you could use where you have like a moment of you're feeling badly about something? I mean, I think we all have them every day. And then that you could say to yourself, okay, this is how I'm feeling. Then the common humanity piece, and then what do I need? That's an important question to ask yourself as much as you can.
Yeah.
What do you need in this moment?
Is that, sorry, was that a question for me, or was that just generally speaking?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was for you.
Yeah, so...
a
couple of things that come to mind with that is, to me, there's sort of a distinction between... what is the most effective way for me personally? And then oftentimes, what is it that I do? And oftentimes if I'm kind of feeling in a rut or feeling stuck or whatever, a lot of times what I'll go do is go take a walk, you know, middle of the day walk, listen to podcasts, whatever, when I'm doing that. But oftentimes when I do this, I kind of come back and feel the same as I did when I left. So what I have found to be much more effective for me personally is, kind of going inward a little bit and doing meditation is probably the best description for it, but it's really just bringing some awareness to my body and like my internal state. And even just doing that for a minute or a couple of minutes, I can go, if I do it for a minute or 2 minutes, you know, with in a quiet room with my eyes closed and then go take that walk, I feel enormously different when I get back versus I remove that first part. I go take that walk. I feel pretty much the same when I get back. And I don't know why that is or what goes into that, but that's been very effective for me is doing
something
like that.
Well, I think what you're saying is really true. I think that's one of the most important things is to, how do I feel? So I feel anxious. So you don't just jump into taking the walk. You say, I feel anxious, and then feel the feeling as long as you can. So you have to like feel the feeling, not resist it. And then say, what am I going to do? You know, what will make me feel better? Yeah. So you are going into yourself a little more is good. I'm taking Lisa Schlossberg's group.
Yep.
It's out of the cave, and it has to do with body image and weight loss and basically a lot of the things, you know, a lot of the things. I mean, they use self-compassion, they use journaling. And she said, like, if you feel like you want to eat, uncontrollably eat, and you just want to do that, a good thing to do is just to pause and then to go inward, somehow to go deep. This is like my goal, I think, in my life is to go deeper than I have, to go deeper for a little bit and then see if you can not have that urge to eat.
Yep.
So might still have it, and that's okay. And that's where the self-compassion would come in. It's okay. I can eat. I don't have to restrict myself right now. I can eat whatever I want. But there's, you know, I guess there's ways that you deal with it otherwise, besides eating, besides just eating and eating and eating.
What about one thing I'm curious about is compassion for others. How is that? You know, because a lot of to me, it almost seems like a catch 22, but a lot of this stuff, meaning like TMS type stuff, for a lot of people can relate to a trauma that occurred, you know, years or decades ago, like a long time ago. And oftentimes that trauma involves somebody else. In fact, almost every single time, and it could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be a significant other, whatever.
It's not always easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So how is there compassion in those situations?
Well, the first thing is to feel compassion for yourself, and then to realize that that's not a selfish thing. Fill your own cup first, feel compassion for yourself. And a lot of the meditations are like, we'll be doing a self-compassion exercise and then extend it out to the community or to people that we're having difficulty with, difficult people in our lives, and try to give them some compassion. But the main thing, and then, I mean, there's so many things that go with it. Like another thing, I know I'm jumping, but another thing you could do to make yourself feel better is to set a boundary. Set a boundary. Like if someone is really difficult in your life, work it out and just say, well, okay, I know I have to see the person, but I don't have to see them as much.
Yeah.
Like just try to ways that make you feel better, and that's okay. And then we do a lot with compassion for the world and compassion for other people in our big group. But we do, one of the meditations is giving compassion to someone difficult in your life. So you'll do that. And then you'll say things like, may we be, okay. So there's four things that you can say in a loving kindness meditation, but I mean, I have tons of phrases that I use, but may I be happy? May I be peaceful? May I live with ease? May I be healthy and strong. Those are just four basic ones. So what I've done is when I've done it with my small group is we've done that. And then we'll say, may we be happy. May we be peaceful. May we be healthy and strong, and may we live with ease. So it's kind of a group type compassion meditation. And then in the bigger groups that, you know, I'm part of, they'll say extend it to whoever you want. Whoever's on your mind, even the person at the grocery store that's checking you out that might have been nice to you, extend compassion to them. But giving compassion to everybody in your life is not easy. I mean, it's people that are just difficult to deal with.
And is it more of a, like one thing that, like Dr. Hanscom has come on my podcast, we've talked together, and he had told this story, this like really amazing story of a patient of his that had been coming in. She was wheelchair bound, you know, had a variety of different issues that was going on. He had made recommendations around, you know, reading his book and getting involved in like, he calls it back in control. But, you know, basically a more of a emotionally rooted solution despite her being wheelchair bound. And then he said that, you know, she'd been in a wheelchair, I think he'd said, for like 25 years, something crazy. And then had come into his office walking as if nothing had happened. And he said, you know, what did you do? What happened kind of thing? And she said, I just forgave everyone. And that, it was that simple for her.
That's another piece is forgiveness.
Yeah. So that was another thing I was going to ask is like, somebody feels wronged by something that happened to them. How, because he would say like, forgiveness is really like, you don't have to go to, the, I think when, if I were to say, if somebody were to ask me, Eddie, what is forgiveness? Initially, I would think, oh, you're going to the person that wronged you and you're saying, I forgive you. But right. So what's the what is the misconception there? And then how can you apply that with compassion?
Well, we just did a meditation. There's so many pieces, you know, that people can find online too, but with this mindful self-compassion group, but we did a meditation on forgiveness and it's more forgive. It helps you to feel better.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm touching on that enough, but you want to do things that help you to feel better so that you can be available to others and you can feel good about yourself. It helps people to feel better to forgive. I think I put a quote on my Instagram about that, to forgive someone. It doesn't mean going to the person and saying, I forgive you for, you know, I forgive you for belittling me and emotionally abusing me. But in your mind, if you could forgive them, it's helpful.
Yeah.
I know with my mother, it wasn't really conversation, but I had some issues with her. I had more issues with my father, but my mother, I had some. But before she died, I wanted to be sure that I forgave her. I don't know if I ever said I forgive you, because she would have said, what did I do? But I've made sure that I was in a good place with her so that when she died, I would not feel like I regretted my feelings.
Yeah.
So I felt like things were resolved. But yeah, I mean, it is helpful to use forgiveness. And it doesn't mean you have to be with the person, you know, and continue with them. But yeah. It helps you.
Yeah. What you're saying also kind of reminds me of an interview I did once with, I think he was a chiropractor actually. And we were having a discussion around the topic of like, there's so many people that I talk to that have this massive anger with like doctors and kind of just medicine in general, where they feel like they've been, you know, they've gone doctor to doctor. Mm-hmm. They've been given a variety of different diagnoses and, you know, all of them been wrong and all this kind of stuff. And his response to that was something along the lines of, yes, but they're doing the best they can with the information they have. And that sounded a lot like the equivalent of forgiveness, but not having to go to the person to forgive them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like I have had doctors that have been totally off, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure I did the forgiveness piece. Maybe I should still do it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I answered your question before about the personality types, about being really hard on yourself and perfectionist.
Yeah.
And I think with, you know, I also have worked with Nicole Sachs and I did a virtual retreat with her. And what worked for me with the TMS and other things was journaling. And she does journal speak. And to help, you're always going to have that type of personality probably. But I mean, she does journal speak, and every time, so you do a journal speak and you'll write down what's bothering you. You can go back to, I used to go back to when I was like 5 years old or, you know, sometimes later, but whatever was on my mind, 20 minutes at the timer, just write. And I liked it because it was writing, but it wasn't writing neatly or in sentences or anything.
Yeah.
It could be scribbling, and then dump it. If you want, dump it, throw it away. And then you would do a loving kindness meditation after. So the loving kindness and the self-compassion seems to be carrying over everywhere I look into different types of work. And the loving kindness meditation is for you, giving yourself to, yes, you did this. You did the journal speak. You've done that for today. You're on your way to healing. You know, you're a good person, whatever. So she had her own little meditation that I still have, or I can do any of the ones that I have here. But that is really helpful too. So I think, you know, your personality, basic personality probably doesn't change. You know, I could still be really uptight and really, want things to be just right, but I definitely am calmer with the self-compassion work, definitely overall calmer. And I realize that even if I'm not calm, it doesn't last forever. Everyone struggles. Everyone has difficulties. But I'm going to have good moments. And you can't really fix everything in your life. So it's a matter of acceptance, accepting what is and going with it.
My 8-year-old refers to it as the dip. Being in the dip is what she calls it. Which I think is funny, but it's just like you're saying, you know, in a rut, it's not going to last forever. Everybody kind of goes through this, right, and she refers to it as being in the dip.
She's pretty insightful.
Yeah, yeah. Her social emotional is fairly high. And actually, we just recently got an email from her teacher saying that they're, or not from her teacher, from there's a licensed clinical social worker that's working in the district, and I think is looking for like small groups of kids to do like weekly sessions as like group. And I jumped all over that. So I thought it'd be wonderful for any kid, but you know, for ours, I think it'd be really great.
Yeah. Yeah. They asked my granddaughter, I guess she's in kindergarten. They asked her if she would be like a model, like a model student in the group with the kids with some difficulties.
Yeah.
I don't know if she did it yet, but that was, she's pretty insightful for a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
But so I think, and also with the self-compassion work, you know, I wish I had found it sooner, but I didn't, the actual work in, so that I could help, you know, share it with people. But I think the more you do it, if you stick with it and a few times a week, practice it, get the workbook. However, look up loving kindness on any of the Insight Timer. Any of them have loving kindness meditations. You stick with it, it's going to help you too, or people to feel better about themselves.
Yeah. I know that you had, and I talked about us going about 30 or so after, but I'm curious about, I knew you'd said that you'd taken some notes beforehand. Is there anything additional that you want to make sure that we hit on
in the interview
that we haven't yet?
I can read my writing. I mean, I have so much and I jot notes everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, some of the meditations are, I mean, there's affectionate breathing, which is a basic breathing meditation. There's loving kindness for yourself, loving kindness. And these are the mindful self-compassion centers meditations, loving kindness for others. There's a compassionate friend. So you're visualizing yourself in a place that you like the beach, and this friend, you picture someone that really, you know, you connect with, and they come sit with you, and it's a compassionate friend, but it turns out that the compassionate friend is really yourself.
Yeah.
At the end. Tree of life. I mean, it's this variety of them. And you know, because we're getting into more, we have more all the time. And then I took two courses also in the mindful self-compassion, 2 8-week courses, which was helpful because we went through the book and, you know, it was a little more intense than what we do now.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at these. When you see yourself as you are, so that's acceptance, self-acceptance. When you see yourself as you are, that's how you really begin to change. So it's you can't like say, okay, I want to a quick fix. I don't like the way I am about this. And then, but if you say, okay, this is the way I am, it's not easy. But if you can accept, it's called radical acceptance. If you can accept who you are and what's going on, the change will come gradually. As opposed to saying, oh, just being frustrated that, you know, you can't change and things are just going to be bad forever.
Yeah, there was a phrase. I did a job interview at a radio station. It was like 15 years ago or something like that. But the offer they gave me was not what I thought it should be. And I was very frustrated about it to like the program director, the guy running the station. And he had this phrase that I found myself repeating for a good, I don't know, 12 or 13 years because I hated the phrase so much. And it was just, it is what it is. And the phrase made me so upset. But then just a couple of years ago, and I've been doing this podcast now for over 5 years. A little over 5 years. And I sort of realized that in this particular work, acceptance is a huge part of it. And the phrase, it is what it is, as much as I hate the phrase, is really sort of perfect. And that sounds like what you're talking about. That's like, you know, it's frustratingly radical acceptance. It is what it is,
but things don't last forever either. So you remind yourself of that. The other, there's a couple of things. I mean, body scan is another thing, which they do in all kinds of, you know, work. But opening your heart is really important, because once you can open your heart, it's part of compassion, open your heart to yourself and then to others. That's helpful. And self-soothing is another piece where you can soothe yourself. This could be, what do I need? Could be that, like, I, you know, put your hand on your heart, find a place, like maybe if you get a lot of headaches, like I do, maybe massage your head, you know, just self-soothing types of things.
Yeah.
Put your hand on your face, which feels funny at first, but it does help.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. I mean, there's so much. There's so many things. And I guess I do have it down pretty well. I may not be explaining it scientifically, but the more you do self-compassion, the more it helps you to feel better and fuller and just better towards life. I mean, life is not easy for anyone. So anything you can do to make it easier, which it does. And the connection too, thinking of connecting with other people and, you know, you're not alone.
If you were to say, like two things that people can do or two things that people can think about that are listening to this right now that maybe struggle with this. And I think that a lot of people struggle with this, but probably 90% of people struggle with this that are listening to this right now. What are just a couple of suggestions or things that you would recommend that like they can do today that's easy in this arena?
They could do the self-compassion break. So they could say, take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, say to themselves, have mindfulness, say, what do I feel? What's going on? Why am I feeling so anxious? Why am I feeling so scared? Fear is another whole thing. What, you know, and then address that and then say, it's okay. You know, people feel this way at different times. Other people feel this way. That's the common humanity. And then the third piece is, what do I need? Ask yourself, what do I need? And like I said, it could be a cup of cappuccino. It could be a walk. It could be breathing in. It could be sitting in a chair and just, you know, meditating basically, or just in silence. That's one thing. I mean, that's, and then some people set their timers. So they take a break every, you know, like maybe every hour, every 2 hours and do that or do a quick breathing. I would also recommend looking up the Mindful Self-Compassion Center online. It's Christopher Germer and Kristen Neff, and they have a lot. They have the group meditations that I'm referring to that are offered 3 times a day for free. They're about 45 minutes, but the actual meditation's about 20, and then there's discussion. Or they could find ones they could do on their own, and just some reading, maybe just some basic reading in the area. The workbook is good, but it has a lot in it, but maybe just, and Kristen Neff, I know she's got some, podcast or she's speaking and she's got something that's coming out to listen to. So that might be the way to go to listen to one of their podcasts.
Yeah. I'll have to check her out. I hadn't heard of her before talking to you, and I'm just looking at like the Amazon reviews, and it's got like almost 4,000 reviews and a 4.7 out of 5, which is very difficult to do on Amazon, but the reviews are glowing on that work.
Yeah, they're amazing. And there's a children's book coming out too in, I think, March. I forget the name of it. It's Wendy O'Leary is the author, and it's for children like 3 to 7 for self-compassion and mindfulness. And it looks really good. I looked at it. I was going to buy it, but it's not out yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just a lot. And if my niece didn't mention it to me, I wouldn't have known. I mean, maybe I would have somehow come upon it, but I wouldn't have known. Of course, doing Nicole's work and Lisa Schlossberg's now, it does involve self-compassion and loving kindness. So it's not, it is being incorporated more and more into everything. If you do something that's difficult and then you give yourself credit for doing it. You know, I did that. I did the best I could. You know, it's, doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to learn to talk to yourself in a more positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is great. Linda, thank you so much for being here. If people are curious about some of your content, the way that I found you, where can they find things that you post?
I guess,
connect with you.
I have my card, but I don't have the cards. I have a new card, so I don't have it. When I have it, I can put it on my Instagram page when I have the actual card. But they can go to my Instagram page, The Compassionate Psychologist, and I have a lot of, most of the things are not written by me, but things that I've posted that I've thought were relevant. So yeah. There's a lot on compassion and being kind to others. Kindness, like your daughter and your wife's, you know, has told your daughter to be kind to others and be kind to yourself, be kind to others. In the morning, set an intention. I will be compassionate to myself. I'll be compassionate to others. But if they go to my Instagram page, they can reach me that way.
Awesome.
And then you can, if you want my email, you have my email.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Well, I'll link your Instagram page in the show notes. Hang on here after the episode ends. Just stay on the line with me. But this is where we'll depart. Linda, thank you so much for being here.
Okay. Thank you. It was great.